The following is an at-will presentation.
Angels and gods and aliens, please help me. I pray for myself and pray for my family and friends and lovers and strangers and enemies. Shine light down on them and me so I can properly see me. I pray in the name of love, just be, not this, not that, beyond definition, me.
Oh, look at her face. Feminine, ist, ish, radically, fish. Courtney Michelle Harrison loves Courtney Love. Her name is might have been Saints Wish and they sin. July 9th, 1964, Love's love child, Harrison's dead, grateful purple microtab, Linda's gestalt, psychotherapeutic lab daughter, do this, don't do this, Pacific Northwest, barefoot, shoeless, communal ass, wangly, hippies, hiptified, genderless, Montessori educated, the little girl with the list, spectrumated, age 10, hypnotized, plane to New Zealand, start over again, American girls, rebel heart, repulsion, lead expulsion, oh, back to Portland, she goes to spend. Gross. Magical, horse medicine infected. Stole a t-shirt, bullshit, arrested. Hillcrest knows bested. Emancipated at 16, free from programmed attachment. Herself's future obscenely, magnificently seen. Men fawn and fiend, her topless flesh strips. Is she now finally seen? Japan, Taiwan, and Dublin queen. Holy Trinity, theologically, the teardrops explode at dawn. The teardrops explode at dawn. Take care of yourself, doll, sugar baby, witchcraft, crystal-tuned, pagan babies born on Black Tar's full moon, Club Vatican, Club happy again and sad again, Sid and Nancy, premonition, straight to hell, fruitful fruition, she's doing well. Andy hears holes in ear holes, Andy Warhol's war holes, 15 minutes, c'est la vie, strip tolls, bare naked, shallow water drops, anchor, anchorage, blanket, hole. We fall and we climb out. We fall and we climb out. On stage, check, sound, dick, nail, hole, grail. Pretty on the outside, tough. Pretty on the inside, rough. Teenage whore, right for time and place. Beautiful son, beautiful daughter, bean. Where did you sleep last night? Caught her, seen. And someday you will ache like I ache, like Basquiat ached, like Larry Flint ached, like Kurt ached, like my father, Kurt, ached. I love him so much, it just turns to hate. Always be the girl with the most cake and fucking learn. Learn how to eat it too. Saw love, stuck, glue. Name, shapes changed, Harrison's weight not blamed. Her name is never was, but always will be. Bombs, love, tamed, explode on the scene. Guitars, rock, goddess, loves, named, Cobain, radically, femininity, teaching girls what and what not to do. Dharma, bum, spoken word, spit drips like cocaine. Hollywood, courage, punk, cheap, female, heroin, shoots heroin in vain. My God, take Lord's name in vain. Oh my God, do chance save. I met her first in Vancouver. Menendez, conspiracy, maneuver, gentle. Preconceived notions wax and wane, waves, ocean, still. The girl with the history, past parts kill, but the parts still alive are some of the most beautiful I've ever seen. Graceful, phoenix, rising, risen. Committed to the craft, light and love, spaceful, fixed, spirits kindred, sweat lodge, wandering buffalo spirit, wanders to plant medicine, horse, not forced, woman, pen pals, and confidants. Want love, she's teaching me. My teachings she sees, and today we share. Today two humans psychotherapeutically share, love bond shamanically, a friend in me. Her name is not forgotten. Care. Courtney Love, I love, and I care.
This is the love bomb. This is the show. Yeah, it's the love bomb. We're taking you up and down. This is the love bomb.
This is a conversation with a woman I love named Courtney Love.
Explosive shockwaves can cause situations such as body displacement, emotional breakthroughs, relatable flashbacks, and love. Above all, this is love.
Oh my God, that's so beautiful. Oh. I'm so moved, really.
Thanks.
Nico, wow, how beautiful.
I'll send it to you too so you can read it on your own. I know it's...
Wow, my heart's like bursting. Oh. It's so sweet.
It was really special for me to write that. There's a lot of love in that.
Yeah, it's lovely. Yeah. I don't know what to say. I want to cry.
It's okay. That works. That's enough for me.
Oh.
So welcome to the Love Bomb.
Hi, Love Bomb.
Let's start where we met, how we met. We did this movie together, this little Lifetime movie that could.
Little Lifetime movie that could.
Menendez. The story about the Menendez brothers that killed their parents. Yes.
Right.
And you played Kitty.
Yes, I took a very matronly role.
Yeah, how was that for you, stepping into that?
It wasn't hard. Yeah. It was just, I look at the clothes and I just laugh. This is like, oh man, she was really working that 47 Beverly Hills 1988 thing.
Right, for sure. We went to a sweat lodge.
Yeah.
In the middle of nowhere.
The
Vancouver.
Middle of no fucking where.
Okay, so here's the story. We're going to break it down a little bit. So I... Like, the first week that I'm there, I, like, reach out to this place called the Urban Shaman. I've been doing the shaman work, and I knew that there were a lot of natives in Vancouver. There was a big native scene. So I sent some emails out, found this native named Kenny. and I was like, look, I would love to come to the sweat lodge. He's like, okay, we have one on Sunday. I was like, great, I'll meet you there. What's the address? He's like, well, there's, you know, TPs don't really have addresses. And I was like, well, okay. He's like, why don't you meet me at the Aboriginal Friendship Center at 2:00? And I hadn't told you about this when this was happening, but like the day before, I was like, hey, there's a sweat lodge. I don't know much about it. I'm being picked up by this random dude at the Aboriginal Friendship Center. Do you want to come with me? And you said,
yes.
Yes.
Let's have an adventure.
So walk me through it a little bit. How was that experience for
Well,
you?
So we get to the Aboriginal Friendship Center. I believe it was on a weekend. So it was on a Saturday or Sunday. It was on a Saturday, right? And Kenny's there. And first of all, I'm sending my manager his license plate number because I'm terrified that we're going to be, you know, spit grill food.
Yes.
Or something. We're going an hour and a half outside of Vancouver, British Columbia, to Indian Reservation.
We're going deep in Capilano, yeah.
Capilano, right. And Kenny's car has like Cheetos and Pepsi Cola and like M&M, you know, like just trash everywhere. And Kenny's like, not what I'm expecting. I'm expecting like kind of a shaman.
Right.
Which, I mean, he did definitely prove that night he had those dimensions.
Oh, 100%. And he said he wanted Chinese food. So he was like, can you take me out to Chinese food?
And you had to bring cigarettes. You had to bring him cigarettes.
We had to bring the sacred tobacco.
For
the ceremony. Yeah. But as we were eating Chinese food with him, like the wisdom that he was spewing, it was pretty intense, actually.
Yeah. Well, he drank 3 Pepsi Colas and stuffed his face with MSG and beef and God knows what. He said some very profound things.
He really
It was a dichotomy.
Underneath all of that was a light of sorts.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. I thought he was very light. I wasn't very judgmental. I was like, what is why aren't is this how people react to this? Do they not take care of their bodies? Right. What's the deal?
Yeah, that's always something that I am like a little confused about.
I remain confused about it because of the very far away on the ride home, one of the guys had 4 sweat lodges that week and they were going to go to a Denny's and have like meat and cheese. And I was just like, this is weird.
Right. No connection between body and mind in terms of health and mental health.
Well, yeah. I mean, I didn't meet everyone, but I met quite a few of the people. Yeah. And so then we get taken to this Kenny Drives. And you're engaging with him, and I'm coming in the back, like not engaging with him because I'm a little more introverted than you are. And Kenny drives far, far away, and then we pull up, and it's about, sweat lodge didn't start till 7, right?
Right.
And we pull up around 4.
Three
and it's
hours.
Like, It's shitting rain.
Yeah, and there's nowhere for us to sit.
Nowhere for us to sit. All.
And look, like, we're going to a sweat lodge, so we can't, like, we're not... We obviously know this isn't going to be the bougiest fucking place in the world, but we're sitting underneath a tarp, like freezing cold,
it
you and
really
I.
It was really cold.
And we were Instagram Live videoing.
We did Instagram Live.
We did.
People start slowly arriving, and they put in these rocks into a propane-made fire that they call grandfather rocks.
Grandfather rocks, yeah.
Grandfathers. And he started with 24 rocks, which I guess is rather extreme for a sweat lodge.
Right.
And remember, I had to go around the corner from a hotel and get a long skirt because women have to be...
You have to be fully covered as a woman.
Fully covered, and which I don't mind. And he was like, you know, lust has no place and drugs have no place.
We are all one in here. It's a raceless, genderless, desexualized community. Yeah.
Yeah. And so... So these guys get off their shirts in the rain. I guess they know what the heat's going to be because they don't seem to be chilly at all.
I mean, it's freezing outside.
Freezing cold.
Yes.
And they slowly, and then there's a firekeeper.
Mm-hmm.
The firekeeper was in the car with us when we drove back. And
the metalhead.
The guy into Slayer. He was the guy that was really into Slayer.
As the firekeeper, like, should be.
Yeah, Slayer and death metal.
Right.
And he had a big fork, like the devil, and he put it on this wood and put one rock in at a time, and they were molten red.
Mm-hmm.
And I was getting a little scared because there were all these little tarps all over the place.
Right.
These little huts.
It was like a sweat village.
Yeah, it was a sweat village. And they were having some sort of smokehouse celebration on the reservation on the other side that we could hear once we got in, of people just dancing and screaming and
the
stuff.
The drums going, yeah.
The drums going. And a woman finally came. I was relieved to see a woman there. Mm-hmm. And
this is your first sweat lodge. We've never said
never
this.
Done
this
it
is
before.
Your first time at a sweat lodge.
I didn't
lodge.
Even
yeah.
read up on it.
Right.
I just did it. Mm-hmm. And... It has to be good for you.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm still waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, when's my epiphany happening?
Mm.
But I guess it did happen. Mm. But we did four rounds.
Four 20-minute rounds, yeah.
Four 20-minute rounds. Those 20 minutes felt like a lifetime.
Wait, the best part of the story, though, is... I mean, not the best part of the story, but...
Oh,
like,
I got trolled?
Yes. Or, like, in the... Like, when we first... So nobody really knew who you were. Like,
nobody knew who I was.
Everyone kept saying, like, oh, you look familiar. They were like, have you been to this lodge before? Oh, I've seen you before. But, no, like, absolutely nobody knew who you were.
No.
But Kenny knew your name. Courtney Love.
Right.
So at the beginning of the sweat, Kenny gives this full speech.
With the flap closed.
Yes.
And it's completely black.
There are there's probably 20 of us cuddled in this lot. Like, so you can't put your legs out. We are so close to each other. Yeah, definitely uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable.
And fucking hot.
And hot.
Yeah. So Kenny gives this whole speech about how we are all one in here. And then he goes... And we have some special guests with us tonight. We have Nico and Courtney Love. And
some guy goes, boo.
Boo.
And I was like, really? And then I got really introverted. He goes, I'm sure you're not the same Courtney Love. I'm like, and Kenny actually said, there's only one. And he hadn't Googled me yet. He just sensed it. And
I immediately grabbed your hand and I was like, guys, we are all one in here.
Right.
Okay.
Let's I got trolled at the sweat lodge.
Like, who gets trolled in a fucking sweat lodge?
Oh, the guy tried to make up to me afterwards, like, so hard.
Right.
Like, I knew who he was.
Yeah.
So, you know, he was just like...
But these were deadheads, too.
They were deadheads, and they were talking to, like, Mickey Hart and Bob Weir and Phil Lesh as though they were human beings that were with, like, Mickey Mouse.
Right.
And one guy was, there's a lot of Indian chanting that goes on during the sweat, and we were doing some of that because there's nothing else to do.
It gets really loud
if you don't do it. If you don't do it, you're going to lose your mind.
Right.
Because being silent is not an option for me.
No.
In that kind of heat and sweat pouring down your face, just pouring. You're just so sweaty, so fast. But one guy was in the corner and he was talking about a psychiatric institution. And
while he was chanting. Yeah, everyone else chanting and he's fucking talking about some
schizo stuff. And I think he was the guy with the beard. There was only one guy with the beard.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we got out for the first round And I was so glad to see that mud and that rain again. Mm-hmm. It was so relieving.
Yeah.
And then I quit smoking. But for this, you know, the smoking is sacred.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't get that, but well, whatever.
I mean, they say tobacco across the planet is like one of the oldest, most sacred plants that we as humans have. And it always has been, right?
But why not then get organic tobacco and put it well, and roll it up?
I had organic tobacco.
Right.
But yeah, no, I completely agree. Like they're smoking. I don't even know what those Canadian cigarettes were. Yeah, I mean, look, they're cutting corners. It is what it is. They need the tobacco, and
every single person smokes.
Yeah, every person.
And then they would say a prayer when they smoked for the grandfathers, the grandmothers.
But that was the same thing when I was in Peru doing ayahuasca. I mean, tobacco is like such a sacred plant.
Really?
It's almost more sacred than the ayahuasca is. Yeah. They say that tobacco actually showed the Peruvians where ayahuasca was. The spirit of tobacco, mapacho, whatever. That's a whole other story.
Right.
So I just by the end of it, like, it was definitely a rewarding experience.
It was definitely rewarding.
Yeah. Do you think you'd go back?
Yeah, I'd do it again.
Yeah.
If you came with me.
All right. So, hey, if anyone's out there running sweat lodges, find us. Courtney and I are in.
And don't troll us.
Do not fucking boo anyone in a sweat lodge.
Yeah. That you never like know who you're going to meet.
The number one rule across the board at sweat lodges, no booing.
No booing at a sweat lodge. I just thought it was a really heavy experience and... The trolling thing was in my head for a little while. Like, I really just got booed, and I was trying to lose my ego. And
I mean, yeah, but maybe that was just part of it. Like, it needed to happen.
Yeah, that
in
needed
the
to happen. Yeah. That I need to know that there's people out there that absolutely boo me in this kind of way,
right?
And think I'm a witch. And so,
I mean, but you've been like witch hunted throughout the years. Like,
but I'm over it now.
Yeah, totally. But like, what is it really that like? I don't know, because there's not one thing about you that I do not like. I just don't really understand. I mean, whatever. That's a stupid conversation.
It's not a stupid conversation. I was thinking about it actually recently about how I really wanted to become famous, but I didn't necessarily want to become liked. And I didn't.
Oh, really?
I didn't care. I didn't need to be loved.
Yeah.
I didn't need to be loved. I just needed to be famous. So I was watching like a Marilyn Monroe documentary, and she talked about how she wanted to be famous so she could be loved.
Right.
And I got famous, and I worked very hard to get famous, but I didn't care.
Well, why did you want to be famous then?
For the light.
For the light.
Yeah.
For the light of what?
The light of, I thought things would be more fair.
Interesting.
And I thought I could express my opinion freely. Because, and I didn't know you had to do things to be loved, like schmaltzy stuff.
Right. Were you not able to express...
I was naive. I was really naive.
Were you not able to express your opinions growing up?
No, I was very introverted.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Mm.
I mean, my family dynamic was one where they'd have like group meetings and they'd try and get you to express your opinions and whatever, but I would just withhold.
You just weren't saying anything.
No, I had a lot of rage in my heart.
Were there other people not saying anything too, or was it just pretty much you?
No, my sisters and brothers all spoke, but I didn't really speak up much. I did not get along with my mother very well.
Yeah.
So I liked my stepfathers.
Right.
One of them I liked in particular, but...
When did that change? When did you start speaking up?
After I got touched by the Holy Spirit of playing guitar.
And that was when you were how old?
Well, I did this New York thing where I chased around these three movies, these Alex Cox movies that you mentioned in your spoken word, and stayed in New York for a little too long. You know, it can be really scary if you're poor there, and it's like the 80s, and it's like, your nose is too big and whatnot. But then I just, somewhere between going to juvenile hall and the confluence of a criminal element messed with my wanting to go to RADA or do Shakespeare.
Right.
So the criminal element. Then I saw the cover. A counselor brought me back from England. He brought me back Patti Smith Horses. Brought me back the Pretenders, and one on the record, I can't remember now, but I saw these two chicks and I'm like, wait, these women make a living this way. Yeah. I love the records, and I was like, I want to make a living this way.
But you wanted to be an actress first.
Yeah, always. And I still did. Mm. But as soon as I got the guitar in my hand, I knew that the way to market myself was not in a family-friendly fashion. Mm. I wanted to be angry. Mm. I was angry. So I didn't want to be angry. I was angry. And the music of the time, Sonic Youth, and sort of coming from that world of Sonic Youth and stuff, we were allowed to play atonally. We didn't have to focus so much on melody.
Right.
So it was like,
you could scream.
You could scream.
Yeah.
You know, and I just screamed my heart out, and I had really good mastery of words.
Mm-hmm.
And wrote really good lyrics.
Right.
And then I didn't plan on screaming for my whole career.
Right.
Make one screaming record, make one poppier record, and then make a super pop record, and then keep making theme records.
Hmm.
Like Rumors or something.
Yeah.
You know,
but is that something that like was common in your life, where you could see everything in the future, where you had these like plans for things, like even just talking about that, I'm gonna have
this
and this and this.
Yeah, I did when I was younger. Now I'm more confused because I'm older, and it's easier to get depressed, and it's hard. I had a dream the other night that my heart opened up and there was nothing in it. Mm. And it was like, there's still ambition.
Right.
I'm full of ambition. It's like white light, white heat ambition. But it's like, where's my place? You know what I mean? Like, I got to write a book. I know I got to write a book because millennials don't really know who I am. Thus, you get a...
You think that's true? You think millennials don't know who you
are? Yeah, not really. They don't know my music that well. Mm. They think I'm cool, but they don't... They're not putting me at the top of the charts.
They like know stories rather than music.
Yeah, they know anecdotal stuff. Mm-hmm. And if you recall, at the Sweat Lodge, the guy goes, when he trolled me, he goes, Courtney Love, Nirvana, Courtney Love?
Right, exactly.
I wasn't in Nirvana.
Yeah, obviously.
I didn't say that to him.
Right.
Because that would be the smart-ass thing to say. But I just sort of went, yeah. I just went with it.
Yeah. I mean, but those are two things that are put together on a regular.
It's so stupid.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that.
If you're dealing with a low common denominator, I guess it's fine. Right. But it's just like, I wasn't in that band. Mm-hmm. That wasn't my band.
I know. If somebody were to ask you just like, who is Courtney Love? How would you answer that?
I'd say I was a really good mom. Mm. I'd say I'm glamorous.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say I'm creative.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a good actor, and I'm a good singer-songwriter, and we'll see about my book. I don't know if I'm a good writer or not yet in terms of prose. And I have pretty high self-esteem in a good way.
You do, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I'm a Buddhist.
And you're a Buddhist. Yeah. We chanted some at the house before we got here.
Yeah, we did.
Your name, Courtney Love.
Right.
That is not your birth name.
No.
My show is called The Love Bomb.
I know.
Your last name is Love.
I know.
Let's talk about just the word for a second. Where did you get it?
Well.
How did it come to you?
Pat Smear, who used to be in the Germs,
mm-hmm.
and I was sleeping on his floor in Hollywood. And we were trying to think of stage names and stuff. And at first I was like, Loveless. Mm. Should be Courtney Loveless.
Wow.
Because that would be ironic, and, you know, no one will ever love me.
Mm.
He's like, don't be stupid. Love is such a much more popular word. And I'm like, you're right. So we decided on the most, we figured out there was three, this is before the internet, but three very famous words. There was free, liquidate, and love. Mm. Those are like the three most, you know, popular words.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we're like, let's just go with love.
But it's interesting because you didn't want to become famous to be loved. But then you pick the last name Love.
I didn't No, it's not that I didn't want. I wanted to be liked,
yes,
respected,
right?
But I didn't care about being a sex.
Oh, a sex,
sex symbol.
Yes, yes, that's totally different.
Or loved that way.
Right.
I didn't care about my feminism, and all the feminists that I came up with, kind of prevented me from even. I mean, I'm compared to them a sex symbol,
mm-hmm.
but you know, there was just like this very like dress like a boy, act like a boy,
mm-hmm.
kind of. Not very feminine thing, and I kind of shattered that a little,
right?
But I didn't want to be objectified, I guess.
Yeah, but I mean, you play with your masculine and feminine energies quite well, right? You have a good balance.
I think so.
The two. What does that mean to you, really?
It means I can grow a pair when I want to.
Totally.
And it means I can be really soft and yielding when I want to.
The first time that you were in love with somebody else.
Okay.
What does that look like? Where was that? How old are you?
I was adolescent and obsessive. Really hormonal. Hormonal. It was driven by hormones.
Mm.
Obsessive, inappropriate.
Yeah.
I think there was some self-harm involved, like cutting my arms and stuff. And then I had a very good group of friends from San Francisco who came up to Portland and saved me from that. And it was just, it doesn't, I look back on it, it's not love. It's like a rite of passage.
Right.
And then my first boyfriend, Jeff, who I loved very dearly and loved very realistically, we were still growing up. We were like 17, 18.
Right.
In between him was a rock star that in another country, but that was also hormonal and obsessive, and I would like be the tea girl and get the tea and stuff like that. And then I met this very solid, he's now a production designer. He designs for Mr. Bruckheimer, and you know, he's a very, very successful production designer. And Jeff and me, we never were very faithful to each other. We screwed around on each other a lot, but it didn't bug me until my best friend decided she was going to put him through UCLA. And I saw all these pictures of them kissing at Disneyland. I didn't think anything of it.
Right.
And we had like a threesome.
Which was like odd for the time period too, right?
Yeah, 80s, whatever.
Yeah, I guess not. So you see these pictures of them kissing. You don't care.
I don't think about it. I don't care about it. So what? And he was very charming. And I treated him like shit. I have to be honest. And he's the only ex-boyfriend I have that won't talk to me.
That's the worst.
His mother talks to me, but he won't talk to me. Jeffrey Brent Mann. And... he just avoids me, and now he's like married, and I don't know what he does. I look at his IMDb sometimes, and I just miss being friends with him.
Yeah.
He's really, really funny guy.
Right.
And we had a very loving relationship. We were promiscuous, and we were kids, and we were doing all sorts of drugs, like crazy intravenous drugs,
right?
Like everyone in LA was doing at the time. I mean, there wasn't a person I can name that wasn't doing intravenous drugs.
How old were you when that started?
The first time was, I had this Uncle Ricky Rodriguez who used to do intravenous drugs, and he was a step uncle, and I was like, no, I'm never going to be like Ricky.
Right.
And the first time I did intravenous drugs, I was with Jeff and my friend Jennifer, and they knew I had a trust fund, and it was $500 a month. Which you cannot live on.
No, not at all.
Even in the 70s, you can't live on that amount.
Right.
But it was like a little pocket change.
Yeah, it was enough for you to get by.
It was enough for me to get drugs for everyone in the house.
Mm.
So they were like, come on, everyone's doing it. It was like reefer madness. Come on, Courtney, everyone's doing it. My question to this day is like, why couldn't they have just got the money from me and left me out of the drugs? You know what I mean? Like, so.
Well, I mean, did you feel like an obligation to be involved because you were the one that was buying it? It was your money.
I didn't feel like it was my money. I felt like it was the community money. But
yeah.
I got really sick.
The first time.
Yeah, I didn't like it at all.
Right.
Everyone was just like asleep for 3 days. Mm. I didn't get it. I didn't like it. And I stayed away from it for years and years after that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. That is not what usually happens at all, right?
No, I hated it. It made me sick.
What brought you back to it?
I worked my way towards it.
Yeah.
Slowly but surely, I... Should we be talking about this?
We don't have to at all.
Slowly but surely, I just decided that I liked the feeling.
Yeah. Well, just this idea.
This is all when I was a teenager.
Yeah. No. Totally. But this idea. I mean, I've struggled with addiction, and I know a lot of people that have. And this love for stepping out of yourself is like just such a fascinating conversation to me.
Right.
And you know, it like waxes and wanes. Like sometimes it's really good, sometimes it's really bad. And like you're always, I don't know, as an addict, you're always like trying to find where,
how to be comfortable in your own skin.
Right. Yes. But like the love for being comfortable outside of it is very interesting. And like, what does that, like, what is the attraction to it? Like, what is the love for that feeling?
Well, I mean, it's something I felt that I had to earn, because no way was anybody going to put up with some little junkie sleeping on their couch.
Right.
So I had no choice but to sleep on couches. Mm. And so I was very, very disciplined about it for many years.
Right.
Made a conscious decision that I would not indulge in it until I had $3 million in the bank, mm. at which point I felt like I could afford to.
Huh. Interesting.
And stuck with that plan.
Yeah. When did you make it?
1992.
Tell me about it.
91. Got signed in late 91. And then, no, I would say even 90, we were doing really, really well. But in terms of like walking into the old Pat Fields and knowing I was the center of the universe. Mm.
I was just talking to Pat about you the other day. Actually.
You were? Yeah. What did she say?
She said she loves you so much. And she goes, ooh, that one is so fucking smart. That's what she said. She told me to tell
nice.
You hi,
is
actually.
Is she your stylist on your show?
My show?
Oh, that's
yeah.
so awesome. I love her. Yeah. She, the store she has now isn't as cool as the store
it's
she
closed.
Used to
it's
have.
Gone.
Oh, it's gone?
Yeah.
Well, she had this really cool store.
Yeah.
And when I had Francis in 92 and I entered in a little stroller and I was walking into Pat Fields in mm-hmm. one of my baby doll dresses that I had made myself, and I was like, why is everyone staring at me? Everyone is staring at me. Everyone, even the normal people, are staring mm. at me. And I was like, wow,
right.
I've made it.
Did you respond well to that attention?
Yeah, I liked it.
You still do?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
It's fun.
Yeah. It's why interesting. Not? People think they know you, you know?
And then go boo.
And then go boo in a fucking sweat lodge.
A sweat lodge.
I want to talk about these lists that you used to make. You used to make these lists,
right?
I mean, you might still do. But as a little kid, you knew you wanted to accomplish these huge things, right?
Yeah.
And I have this theory that like little kids that think like that grow into adults that find each other. Like I had lists. I had such long lists as a little kid. I like still have books of them in my house.
Really?
Yeah. And I don't know. I feel like we like find each other in a way. And you've accomplished pretty much everything that you've wanted to accomplish at this point. Yeah.
Not everything.
Well, not everything, but like everything that may have been on those lists growing up.
Not everything.
Not everything. All right. What's left?
Some stuff.
Okay. Okay. But this idea of manifestation you had at like a really young
yes.
age, right? And
that, yes.
was that taught to you?
And that was the dream I had about my heart being open, was about vibrating at that frequency where I'm pulling stuff in. I'm manifesting. They say never talk about your love life, never talk about your financial life, and never talk about your next move.
Mm. Who's they?
The laws of attraction people, the secret people.
Oh, never ask for it.
No, never discuss it.
Oh, in public at all?
No, you can think it, but don't discuss your love life.
So they would hate my show is pretty much what we're saying.
No, because we're not talking about specific people. Right. I'm not what? Talking actually, about my finances yeah. other than my little $500 schmata month right, that right, ran right. out when I was 21.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we're certainly not talking about my next move. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
you know, it's fine.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
But I think that's wisdom. I think that's real wisdom. And I think as a strategy in the art of war that we fight every day,
right.
I think that's wisdom.
Yeah.
You know, I think I read it on Instagram or something, you know, and it was like The Secret, you yeah. know, and I mean, I've read The Secret, whatever, it's yeah. fine. Uh-huh. But I think
just a remake,
that
really.
resonated with me.
Yeah.
It's like, don't discuss those three. That's where I've always gotten in trouble.
Mm-hmm. You when know, you're talking about those things.
When I've talked about those three specific things.
Interesting.
Talk about your next move. Everyone's going to jump all over that and they're going to ruin it for you.
Right.
People are generally, you know, I know this is the love bomb, but I find that people are generally not that supportive if you talk about something fresh and new that's like a birth that you're birthing out of yourself.
And that's positive. Yeah.
That's positive and that's your new thing. You know what I mean? And until it's in the machine.
Right.
And being process.
It's just a pipe dream. Yeah.
It's people will hurt you.
Huh.
They will hurt you.
Wow.
And they will try and hurt you. And so, you know, when we were doing our movie that I did with you, I remember that day that the 16 people came to take the one picture of me mm-hmm. eating, having a drink while eating a chicken dinner.
Right. We were doing promo shots. Yeah.
Promo shots. It was called an industrial, I
yeah,
think it's
an industrial,
called.
Yeah.
And very expensive, fancy, crafty, mm-hmm. you know, and 16 people to take one shot and, you know, like mm-hmm. they're putting money into it. That's a good thing.
Right.
But my old self, my punky self would have been like, oh, what are these people doing? Ruining our movie.
Yeah.
But my grown, mature self is like, I'm glad this is happening. They're putting us into the machine so that we can succeed.
Huh.
You know, and they're putting us into the proper machine.
Right, instead of just talking about it.
Instead of just talking
yeah,
about it.
I mean,
it.
Punk is like everything against that, right? For the most
yeah,
part.
Yeah, for the most part.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you get to a point in your life where you look at Katy Perry and you go, all right, good job, girl.
Yeah, it works.
Works.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, maybe it's not the art I want to be making, but I have to have mad respect for her. I like her as a person and mm-hmm. I have to have mad respect for what she's done.
Right.
Because I've known her like since she was a gothy girl.
Right, right,
you
right.
know, with a black mullet.
Yeah.
So, I mean, good for her.
Yeah, totally. Did you love yourself as a little girl?
No, but I thought about my future a lot.
Hmm. In a positive manner.
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought I'm going to get the hell out of here.
Right.
And I'm going to do what I want to do.
Yeah. What were you like taught about love growing up? Do you remember anything?
My mother was kind of a love guru around Eugene, Oregon.
Mm.
And she taught like gestalt therapy and
gestalt,
stuff.
Yeah.
So I saw a lot of naked unattractive people.
Hmm.
We had a pool, like an Olympic sized swimming pool.
Hmm.
And people didn't work out back then. So nor did they get waxed. And so I saw a lot of naked people kind of making love, and it really turned me off. Like, there was this one swim instructor, and I was 9, and I wanted to wear a bathing suit, and I got shamed. My sisters didn't want to wear it. They were naked, and I was the eldest, and I got shamed because I wanted to wear a bathing suit, and everyone was swimming naked. And, I mean, that's the kind of reverse
wow.
weird psychology that happens to me. Right. I'm still estranged from my mother. She tries very hard.
Yeah.
And if you look at her Facebook, she's got a perfect life and a perfect mm-hmm. garden. And my family's very good looking. And all my half brothers and sisters are all very accomplished. They're lawyers. They're academics. Mm-hmm.
They fit into the machine.
Yeah. Well, this all happened organically. You would never have thought it growing up with me.
Mm.
But I have one brother who's a NYU professor and another brother who's a professor
mm-hmm.
out here, I think at UC Davis. And I'm really estranged from them.
Mm.
I try. The lawyer sister I'm not estranged from. I like her.
Right.
I try, but I can't. There's no connection.
There's a time and a place, you know?
I mean, hopefully it'll get sorted out before the end.
Right.
But, you know, there's no connection.
How did everything change when you had your daughter?
Oh, well, that's really important to me because there's a huge connection with her.
Right.
And she's my pride and joy. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to be the opposite of my upbringing.
Mm.
And we had a hard period of time. It was over boys and finance. This is stupid. But now we're very close.
Mm-hmm.
And I love her very much. It's the reason I stay in LA.
Yeah, totally. I mean, for you today, like, what does it mean to be the most like loving mother that you possibly can?
It means accepting her for everything.
Yeah.
And it means infinite patience and having the wisdom to having the wisdom to say what needs saying and having the wisdom to withhold and just providing unconditional love.
Yeah. I mean, you've been on the forefront of women's issues since the beginning of your career, I feel like. How do you feel like you've shaped, like, or you've helped shape what this idea of a woman is today?
Well, I was never a riot girl.
Right.
Because I'm not a joiner.
Mm-hmm.
And also, one of them dated Kurt, and I didn't like one of them. And then that spread to, like, six of them. And then they just booted me out of the Riot Girl Club. Mm-hmm. And whatever. But it's been 23 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should all get over that now.
Right.
I really respected their writing.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much the music, because I thought it was too kind of... It wasn't trying hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to go for the big guns. I wanted to go for the big boys. I wanted to sell millions and millions of records, which I did do.
Yeah.
But this wasn't trying to sell millions of records
right.
at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you're going to do something, you should do it all the way,
right.
you know, to the max.
Yeah.
And I feel like my rage was definitely something that hadn't been seen in a lot of women.
Mm-hmm.
And the rage that I put into making music.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'd play topless. Sometimes I'd do cartwheels on stage. I stage dove. Mm. I was very aggressive, very masculine.
Yeah, very masculine on stage.
Yeah.
Yeah, but still like sexy.
Yeah, sexy to a certain kind of male, but
right.
not your average, you know,
right.
Slayer hippie. Courtney Love, boo. No, not your average Slayer hippie or Metallica fan. But that's they're expecting a different kind of female. So I think I was sexier to women than I was to straight men.
Interesting.
And sexier to gay men than I was to straight men.
I mean, you're definitely like very queer in your own right. Would you say that?
Yeah, I'm very much a gay man.
You're very much a gay man. What does that mean?
It means my people are gay men.
Yeah.
Like, that's what my people are.
I mean, because you started partying in gay bars at like 16, yeah?
Yeah, younger.
Younger.
15, 14.
Mm.
And learning drag from drag queens and getting dressed up. And, you know, I'm a little tired for it now. I don't want to do it every night, but
right.
I still like doing it sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think you represent to the community? Like, how do you feel like you've helped shape the community at all?
I don't know if I've helped shape it, but I do remember being at an Amphar opening for Liza with a Z.
Yes.
And I was sitting with Michael Kors and Calvin Klein and I forget who else. I want to say Elton and David maybe. And there was this Amphar, and I'm like, I am a gay icon. This happened.
You 100% are
How
a gay
did this
icon.
Happen?
Yeah.
What happened?
Uh-huh.
I guess it's because I survived.
Yeah, totally. You're alive.
I'm alive to tell the tale.
I mean, you're absolutely supposed to still be alive.
I didn't think my music was really...
It didn't go in line with gay culture.
No, it was not dance music.
But lesbian culture... There's a question mark at the end of that. Lesbian culture?
Yeah, there is lesbian culture. I don't...
Like, do you have, like, a lesbian following?
Yeah.
I'm sure you do.
Yeah, I have some lesbians in the background.
You're pretty much, like, self-taught. Like
autodidactic.
Autodidactic. This is a word that you taught me. I feel like something nobody would expect me to say when they ask me how I was working with Courtney Love is one of the first things I say is she's one of the smartest people I've ever met.
Aw, sweet.
But it's true. Like, the wealth of intelligence that you own is just, like, it's pretty unbelievable.
That's so sweet.
Yeah, but I mean, it's true. Like, what does that mean to you to be self-taught? And just education in general.
Well, I missed education, so I didn't get to go.
Yeah.
So I went to the School of Rock, and I went to the School of New York, Club Kidding, and I went to the School of Club Kids, and I went to the School of Drugs, and I went to all these other schools that you can go to if you want to be famous, but I didn't get to go to school. Mm-hmm. So I really, really respect people that did get to go to school. Mm-hmm. And get kind of jealous of them. And I read a lot.
Right.
And I try and read a new book at least once or twice a week and learn something new daily. Mm-hmm. You know, like not every day, but.
Right. You do your work.
I do my work.
Yeah. You're a student of sorts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I get fascinated by people that did go to school and what they have mm-hmm. to give and teach.
And you're a huge Shakespeare fan.
Yes, I am.
Yes. You go to sleep every night listening to.
I found Acting Shakespeare, which is this seven-part series, and Ian McKellen's Playing Shakespeare, and I put myself to sleep with it almost every night. And
I
it
love
just
that.
Soothes me.
Would you ever want to perform Shakespeare?
Yeah.
I
was going to for this Macbeth that was around 2004 mm-hmm. and then Luc Besson was going to produce it mm-hmm. I believe, and then it fell apart, not because I had nothing to do with that,
right.
Just the finances didn't work
mm-hmm.
and then I found out from my friend who's an artist in Montauk, he was like, oh, they're making Macbeth again. And I'm like, they are. And this was Fassbender. And I quickly Googled Fassbender. It said born 1977. I'm like, I'm not getting it. Too old. So.
All right. Well, at some point, I feel like you will be doing Shakespeare somewhere.
I will. I want to. That's a goal of mine.
I want to talk a little bit about your process of writing music and your love for words and melody. Like, what is the process? Lyrics come first, then music for you?
Yeah. Right now, titles are coming first.
Titles are coming first.
Yeah. I have to have a title or I can't write. I have a song that I wrote called He Only Hit You Once.
Mm.
It's kind of great. Mm. But within that title, there's a whole epic saga.
Wow. So the title comes to you first and then the story.
Yeah. That's how it's working right now. That's my process right now.
I mean, that's kind of like manifestation, right? You like see the final product. You see
yeah.
what it's called. And then you build the pieces together.
I can make a theme to it.
Yeah. That's a great title too. I mean, dark, but He Only Hit Me Once. I love that.
Yeah, there's more, but I don't want to spoil that.
Yeah, no, don't. Do you remember the lyrics of the first song you ever wrote?
Yeah, because I was bad, and I had almost been raped, and by a prominent man, and I went home, and I wrote that song, Teenage Whore, and I was really angry. And I'd run out onto where Highland and Melrose meet to get somebody, and my clothes were torn off me, and nobody helped me. And somehow I got back to Cherokee in Hollywood, where I lived in this like one room, wretched, roach infested cockroach nightmare. And I got my guitar out and I just wrote Teenage Whore.
Wow. That was your first song.
Mm-hmm. And I stuck with that.
That's an epic story. Wow. This doesn't go in line with the three laws that we're not supposed to talk about, but just how has like dating been over the years? Like, do you feel like you are looking for love in somebody else?
I don't know. I'm definitely really career oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody isn't career oriented, I get pretty tired of them fast if they're not like going for it,
right?
But I've had some real losers, had some real winners, had some real losers. I don't know how to answer that question.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, like future, like do you think you like could possibly see yourself like being with one person?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can. Is that something you want?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
All right.
I know what I want from that person. I want to know what I want from him in advance. I know what he's got to be. He's got to be kind of a libertine. He's got to be kind of loose. He's got to be kind of successful.
Yeah.
Smart.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully college educated.
Yeah, it's important.
I don't know. I mean, and attractive. And those are the things I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm. And what are you looking for in yourself for the future? I mean, because obviously you're like in this rebrand of sorts. That,
yeah,
like,
I am.
I am like totally on the team of Courtney Love rebrand.
Courtney Love rebrand.
I mean, but like it's happening. And like just to work with you on set, the amount of dedication that you have to the craft and like I said, the knowledge that you have of everything and what you put into it is so remarkable.
Aww.
But it's true. And like, I really think this is just the beginning of like a really long career in film and television.
I hope so.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that you want. Yeah.
Well, that takes a village. That's where you have to get into more of the corporate stuff, and you have to like really depend on your agency and your agents, and mm-hmm. and you got to be a good girl.
I asked you,
no bad behavior yeah, whatsoever. Well,
not anymore. Yeah. I asked you earlier if you could do one movie, what would it be? And you said,
oh, well, presently Cate Blanchett is playing the goddess of death in a superhero movie. Mm-hmm. I would have liked that role.
Okay, so we are putting together this idea that we're going to put into the universe right now.
Okay.
A superhero movie.
Okay.
I'm the superhero, and you are this ultimate villain, angel of death of sorts.
Like Kali.
Kali.
Right.
Okay. So it's out. It's in the universe. Let's ask for it to come back to us. And I'll see you on set. Okay.
Perfect. Okay. I'll see you on set.
This movie's going to be so good.
It's going to be so good.
Do you remember how much fun we had shooting that movie? Uh-huh. So good. What do you think of when you hear the term the love bomb? Like, close your eyes. What do you see?
A lush thing you put in the bath.
A bath bomb.
A bath bomb.
Like heart-shaped?
No, it was lemon yellow in my head.
It was lemon yellow.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I love it. That's great. It's very
Maybe
relaxing.
Maybe I had a little heart in the inside.
No, no, it's fine. There was no heart. I put the heart in. That was on my own accord. Okay.
Okay.
A bath bomb. Do you like a bath bomb? Do you use a bath bomb?
I like them. They're useless, but I like them.
Yeah.
They go fizz.
What do you think? This is a fucking annoying question.
Okay.
And there is no right answer to it, but like, what do you think love actually is?
Well, self-love has to come first.
Yeah.
You have to respect and love yourself before you can respect and love other people properly.
Can I get an amen?
Amen to that. And you're someone who's like, I really love you and adore you because your glass is always half full. And I tend to be a little more dour and Eeyore. Mm-hmm. And glass is half empty sometimes, and I think that's not a positive place to be, which is why I chant so that I can grow to a state of enlightenment. So I chant Nam Myoho Renge Kyo, mm-hmm. which is the Nichiren Buddhism. It's from 1250, I think it was started, mm-hmm. by a little monk named Nichiren Daishonin, and I chant to a mandala. Mm-hmm. And I chant Nam Myoho Renge Kyo, Nam Myoho Renge Kyo, Nam Myoho Renge Kyo over and over. Mm. And as long as I do that, my world stays sane. Mm. My self-worth stays in check. Mm. It's like an antidepressant or something. Right. You know what I mean? It's cause mood swings stop. I gain benefit from it. Mm. I chant for stuff. Mm. I chant for, you know, stuff I want,
right.
and I get it. Mm-hmm. So it's a really heartening practice, and I'm glad I found it. I found it actually in the 80s, and then I gave up on it. Mm. And then I found it again in 2006 when I really needed to get religion because I was in a dark place.
Mm-hmm.
And 2005. And I've been devout ever since.
Mm. And you chant every day for the most part, yeah?
I skipped yesterday, but yes.
Yeah, you skipped yesterday. And you taught me how to chant earlier.
Uh-huh.
I loved it.
I'm glad.
I feel like we need to just do a couple minutes of chanting right now.
Okay.
Can we just do it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Namyo Renge Kyo Namyo Renge Kyo Namyo Renge Kyo Namyo Renge Kyo Ho Renge Kyo Namyo 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 Namyo Renge Kyo 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 Namyo Renge Kyo. So I quit smoking with that. I quit most of my bad habits with that.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It gave me the fortitude. I swear by it.
Ugh, I love that.
And I got very close with my daughter with that. I mean,
who gifted it to you?
A guy on the street.
Really?
Yeah. On Melrose back in the day. And then I started going to people's houses and I kept seeing wealthier and wealthier people doing it. And I'm like, I want what they've got.
Yeah.
And then I'd go to like an AA meeting. And then I go to a chanting meeting and I look at the different energy fields around the people. And
oh, my God.
The NAAA meetings, it was like dark and gray and so negative. And then I go to a chanting meeting and everyone was so hopeful and they had like blue and pink energy around them. And they were just so much more elevated.
Do you feel like you see energy like that?
I did see auras, and I could see auras most of the time growing up. I could see colors, and then it just sort of went away.
Mm.
It just dissipated. But
I
can feel energy, yeah. And I'm not putting down AA because it serves a great purpose.
Absolutely.
But it just, the energy was so much more productive for me to get it done, and it helped me quit doing drugs and stuff. So,
Do you think that young Courtney would be proud of old Courtney, older Courtney?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think you were chosen for this life?
Because I have a mission, and my mission is yet to be defined to me, but my mission is somehow to help other people.
Right.
That's the bottom line. Mm-hmm. That's what we're all here for. And it's not just about the self and self-serving and, you know, chasing after Andy Warhol when you're 15. That's fine when you're 15. But now at 52, it's like my mission has to be to help younger people and to be uplifting to other people.
And how do you think you do that?
Chanting helps. Mm-hmm. Just being supportive, mentoring people.
Mm-hmm. What are you most proud of in your life?
My daughter.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I love that. This is kind of like a random question, but I like to hear how people answer it. I'm obviously very open about myself, and I dedicate a lot of myself, most of myself, to a level of truth, right?
I get that.
You've been in the industry for a long time. You've seen how it works. You know how it works. Do you think that the extent of my truth is going to negatively affect any sort of acting career?
I don't think so.
You don't?
No, I don't. I really don't. I don't think it matters at this point.
Mm.
I don't think it's, if you're talking about, are you talking about sexuality?
Well, just whatever, just like being open, being an open book.
Right. I think you're ambitious. Mm. I get that. And I love that. And I think you're honest at the same time. And I think that's a recipe for good.
And I'm just happy.
You're happy. I'm glad to have you amongst my friends. You're my happy friend.
I don't know. I'm just really happy that our paths have crossed. I got this script for Menendez and I looked at it and I said no first. And then I looked at it again and your name was on the breakdown? And I said yes.
Oh,
it's true. Like, it's true. It's really like the reason that I wanted to go and do this movie and to work with Randy and Fenton afterwards. But I just like, I knew that we were put here in this project to like affect each other in one way or another. I think that it's happening and I cherish our friendship so much. And I'm so happy that you came and did this. Like, it means the world to me.
Thank you so much. It means a lot to me too.
And I love you.
I love you too, Nico.
Spreading the love around. This is the Love Bomb. This is the show.
Oh, wee! Bam! We back! Love Bomb, Season 2, coming in hot with that Courtney motherfucking love. Oh my god, I am so obsessed with this episode. I'm so obsessed with her. I can't get enough of it. Hey, if you want more of us, check out our movie, Menendez Blood Brothers, on Lifetime. World premiere. June 11th, Sunday, at 8, 7 Central. I saw it last week. It is nuts, you guys. Like, seriously. All right, follow me on Instagram at Nico Tortorella, Twitter _ Nico Tortorella. I don't know why I don't have that match in my Instagram. I should call somebody about it. And check out our website, thelovebomb.us. That's thelovebomb.us. Yeah, because it's about you and me and everybody in between. And you know where to find Courtney. I mean, she's Courtney Love, you know, so just at Courtney Love. I love you guys. Peace.
This is the Love Bomb. We're about to explode. Nico.